Claws and teeth, backed by sinew and magic, ripped the Lazatep warriors limb from limb. Within minutes, the entire crop was in pieces at the two planeswalkers' feet. They moved on. They were en route to Sunholm, Guildhall of the Boros Legion. Gideon's plan was to engage with the Boros Guildmaster, the Angel Aurelia, and recruit his old friend to the cause. He knew that Boros Sky Knights had been the first to engage the dragon. But, suffering an early defeat, they had withdrawn to establish a perimeter. That wasn't good enough. Knowing the Legion's strength and righteousness, it was imperative the Boros do more than hold an arbitrary line. The Legion had to engage. It had to attack. Preferably in coordination with the growing numbers of planeswalkers that were arriving every minute. Case in point, another planeswalker materialized right in front of both of them amid a burst of ghostly green light. Female, dark skin, short hair, heavily muscled and armed with a bow, which she promptly aimed at them both. Ajani said, "Planeswalker?" Though, of course, that was obvious, both from her arrival and from the arc of golden light that both could see trailing from her, thanks to Karn's spell. She hesitated, then nodded. Ajani said, "Ever hear of the dragon Nicol Bolas?" She said nothing, but the burning fury in her eyes told the tale. Gideon said, "Yeah, that's how we feel. I'm Gideon, this is Ajani. Bolas is here on this plane. He thinks he's going to conquer it. We plan on killing him first. Want to help?" She spoke for the first time, anger rising steadily in her voice. "My name is Vivian Reed, and I don't want to help. I want to kill the dragon myself."
"As long as he ends up dead," Ajani said.
She inhaled, trying to rein in her rage. She succeeded. "As long as he ends up dead," she agreed.
"Then follow us," Gideon stated, moving past her.
Vivian and Ajani flanked him. "I have questions," she said.
"We probably have answers," Ajani offered.
"Not now we don't," Gideon shouted.
A squadron of flying Eternals, angels, Avon, demons, and drakes had just passed overhead. Gideon took off at a sprint to catch up. His two companions were right behind him. They turned a corner into Precinct 4's grand courtyard. The Eternals were strafing the place, attacking everyone within sight. Gideon tried to engage, but the flyers would swoop in and out, always staying just beyond his reach or Blackblade's. Ajani wasn't having any better luck, but Vivian's bow was extremely effective. Every time she fired an arrow, it would pierce one airborne Eternal and simultaneously release some kind of green glowing spirit animal, a great owl or hawk or pterodactyl, which would attack and sometimes kill a second Eternal before fading away.
"That's some bow," Ajani said.
She simply nodded and knocked another arrow. But even with their new companion's help, the battle wasn't going well. There were just too many. And grounded as he was, Gideon felt powerless. The best he could do was gather civilians around him and use his sword to fend off that Lazatep Avon or this Lazatep demon. But, invariably, some poor straggling Ravnican just out of his reach would be scooped up, flown high, and released to shatter against the stony ground. Gideon felt every death as a personal failure. He looked north. Sunholm Fortress was in full view, and Gideon cursed himself for not reaching Aurelia before this attack had begun. He needn't have bothered. Parhelion II, the response garrison, the floating citadel, the flying fortress, rose above Sunholm, perfectly symmetrical, hovering overhead, a glorious sight to behold. Even the Eternals seemed to pause to soak it in. Then, from Parhelion II's two great stone ramparts, the Boros deployed. Battle angels took wing. Sky Knights riding griffins descended to meet the foe. Gideon searched the sky for Aurelia, suddenly desperate to see her again. And there she was,
white feathered wings spread nearly 10 feet across. Sword in one hand, spear in the other, leading the charge, barking out commands, and personally devastating the eternal line. It was almost a rout. Almost. Gideon ushered the 6 humans and 2 goblins he had been protecting toward the nearest building, the nearest doorway. Ajani was doing much the same with his group. Vivian was still firing off a seemingly endless stream of arrows, creating a nearly endless menagerie of spirit animals and aiding the Boros from below. The air above them rang with the sound of battle, a battle Gideon longed to join. Careful what you wish for. Just as Gideon shut the door to a cafe that would, for the moment, protect his 8 civilians, he looked up to see a Boros legionnaire ride a Pegasus toward a trio of Eternal Aven. The legionnaire smote 2 with his sword, but the 3rd swung its wing and knocked the man clean out of his saddle. He fell. The Pegasus dived to catch her master, but he slammed head first into the stones. Gideon could hear the man's neck snap. A sound he was fast tiring of. "This isn't what I wanted," he told himself. And he almost convinced himself, but truly, he wasn't going to miss this chance. Wasting no time, Gideon ran toward the corpse, arriving simultaneously with the Pegasus. He grabbed her reins and swung himself astride, giving the beast a gentle kick to guide her back into the air. He feared she would resist him, out of loyalty to her fallen rider or distaste for a strange hand. But the Pegasus took to her new commander instantly, and Gideon was soon soaring upward toward the 3rd Eternal Aven. Blackblade sheared 1 Lazartep wing right off. The undead creature fell in tight circles, smashing its thin bones against the pavement no more than 1 or 2 feet from the dead legionnaire. Gideon pulled the Pegasus around and joined the aerial battle in earnest. As with the Lancers, the Eternals fell before him.
"About time you got here," a voice called out.
It was Aurelia, grinning that warrior's grin of hers, the kind she only grinned in battle. She had another smile for gentler occasions, but either would have been a welcome sight to Gideon.
"Fashionably late," Gideon shouted with his own grin.
He knew it was no time for smiling or quips, but he couldn't help himself. He remembered Liliana telling him once, "No one likes a giddy Gideon, beef slab."
Well, no point trying to please that one anymore.
Aurelia swooped in alongside him. She nodded toward the Pegasus.
"You like her?"
"She's a fine mount."
"Should be. I trained her myself."
"She have a name?"
Aurelia grinned again and swooped away, calling out,
"She's Gideon's promise."
Gideon's smile broadened. He whispered,
"Go, promise, go."
The Pegasus accelerated toward the dwindling enemy.
"Perhaps we can turn this tide yet."
22. Chandra Nalar.
Chandra, Jaya, and Lavinia were pursuing a crop, or 10, of Eternals deep into Selesnya territory. The 2 pyromancers would pick off a few from behind every chance they got, hoping the phalanxes would turn and fight. But the dread horde ignored its losses and maintained its course. They were many and moving fast, and the 3 women had to run just to keep up. Chandra was reminded that Ravnica, largely a city of tight streets and corners, of tall, heavy buildings and heavier shadows, showed different faces at every turn. The territories held by the Selesnya Conclave were open and sunny, full of green spaces and gardens, with white stone buildings open to the air that were often little more than shells housing yet more gardens. Selesnya was a forest of open-air cathedrals, or maybe an open-air cathedral of forests. And the grandest cathedral of all was the sacred world tree Vitu Gazi, which towered over all the conclave's holdings. For 10,000 years, it had been their guild hall, with arches and terraces and chambers built into and upon it. Chandra wasn't exactly a child of nature, wasn't anything like a child of nature, but it still took her breath away. And the thought of Eternals scampering over its bark and roots and branches made her physically ill. Fortunately, Vitu Gazi wasn't undefended. A line of Ledev guardians, armored humans and elves riding wolves the size of bears, met the Eternals dead-on. The clash was epic as wolves launched themselves at the Dread Horde. But Chandra saw that the guardians relied too much on their archers. Their arrows struck with accuracy, piercing the Eternals' Lazatep coating and slowing them down, not at all. Many of the undead creatures continued forward with 5, 10, 20 arrows sticking from their chests and limbs. But that wasn't enough damage to thwart their advance. Catching up to the horde, Chandra and Jaya began incinerating Eternals from behind. As before, they took these losses and ignored them, focusing their attack forward, pushing against the Ledev line to reach the World Tree. Lavinia moved forward to engage as well, but a deep voice pulled her up short.
"Back, Lavinia of Azorius! You are not welcome here!"
They all turned to see a powerful armored centaur, a spearmaster of the Conclave. He was trampling an Eternal under his 4-hooved feet, but his focus was on Lavinia.
"Take your friends and go. We need no Azorius arresters here," he shouted at her.
"Boruvo, you fool! We're only here to help."
Jaya hissed, "I'm not sure calling him a fool is going to convince him." Lavinia ignored her.
"Besides, Spearmaster, I'm no longer an arrester, no longer a member of the Senate at all."
"And you expect me to believe that? Now who's the fool?"
"It's still you."
"Selesnians don't trust Azorius, especially your new guildmaster, Bon."
"I don't trust Bon either."
Just then, a squadron of Eternal warriors riding Lazotep drakes flew in, yanking guardians off their wolves and dashing them against wood and stone. The Ledev line broke, and the Dread Horde rushed forward. Chandra thought she recognized the Eternal leading the charge. A formerly human woman named Makare, whom Chandra had met on Amonkhet. Makare had been deeply in love with a man named Genub, and Chandra briefly wondered what had happened to Genub, wondered whether he was alive or dead, wondered if he would kill the thing his love had become if he could. Lavinia shouted at Boruvo,
"Are you done holding grudges, Spearmaster? Or would you rather see Vitu Gazi fall?"
Boruvo grunted something indiscernible as Makare led her crops forward to chop and hack at the sacred tree itself, while the drakes spat fire at its leaves and thick branches.
"Enough!" Chandra growled, heating up. "Back away, centaur!"
She released a torrent of flame, starting at the back of the Eternal phalanx, but rapidly moving toward the front, toward the Eternals attacking the tree. Jaya grabbed her arm and pulled her back, warning,
"We can't save the damn tree by setting fire to it."
Chandra was about to protest. She wasn't going to burn down the World Tree.
"Okay, yeah, maybe a few branches will get singed, but the drakes are doing that anyway."
Something stopped her from speaking. She couldn't put her finger on what exactly, but it felt familiar. Instinctively, she looked up, looked around. Standing on a balcony across a green swath from Vitu Gazi was a tiny figure, a small woman surrounded by swirling green magic. No, bursting with green magic. She was unmistakably Nyssa Rivaine. Nyssa's power manifested as a green cyclone which swirled away from her, spinning not toward the Eternals, but toward Vitu Gazi. The World Tree seemed to suck the cyclone in, and then the World Tree started to move. Roots ripped free of the ground, dislodging the Eternals, hacking away at them. The Dread Horde now seemed like tiny fleas as the tree rose and stood erect. Branches became arms and hands. Trunks and roots became massive and powerful legs as Vitu Gazi took its first steps. The sacred tree had become a living, walking, and stomping elemental, over 100 feet tall, with buildings and archways still attached, looking and acting like armor for this new gargantuan guardian that had entered the fray and was fast triumphing. Makare and those around her were crushed underfoot. Drakes were slapped out of the sky into shattered fragments of Lazotep by immense hands of ancient wood. Baruvo and Lavinia cheered, even though Lavinia was hardly the cheering type, as Vitu Gazi stepped forward to crush every Eternal in her path while effortlessly flicking off any Eternal still clinging to her roots and trunk. And it was soon clear that the great elemental had only just begun its march. It strode forward toward the city center, toward the Eternal army, toward Bolas himself. But Chandra barely noticed the towering elemental or the chaos in its wake. Nyssa Rivain was her entire panorama. Chandra's eyes filled with tears, though she was already burning so hot that the tears instantly turned to steam. She watched rapt as Nyssa descended, leaping lithely from balcony to terrace to balcony until she stood among them. Baruvo and even Jaya Ballard stood in awe of her, or at least of her accomplishment. Lavinia greeted her. Nyssa didn't reply. She looked at Chandra. Chandra looked at Nyssa. Chandra swallowed. Nyssa managed an embarrassed smile. Neither spoke a word. 23. Rao Zarek. Rao knew what he should be doing. He should be helping Kaya and the new kid Teo fight Eternals or rally Planeswalkers or some such. Instead, when he had told Kaya what he wanted, needed to do, she had simply nodded and said, "Go." It soothed his conscience only a little that before taking off, he had at least remembered to order Chamberlain Mari to lead the Izzet League into battle against the Dreadhorde. But the truth was that if anyone should be leading Izzet forces into battle, it should be their new guildmaster. By choosing to run a personal errand instead, he wasn't exactly demonstrating stellar leadership skills. He didn't care. Tomic filled his every thought. He ran a hand through his silver hair and checked his accumulator. It was down to 46%. There hadn't been a chance to recharge. He thought of summoning another lightning storm, but had neither the time nor the mystic stamina to manage it right now. He spotted another Eternal. A platoon or phalanx or crop or whatever the bloody hell they called themselves, assuming the undead automatons bothered to call themselves anything, had split up and scattered throughout Dog's Run to kill any living soul they could find in the district. "Hey, you!" he called out. The Eternal turned and instantly rushed him, two axes held high to strike. He reached out his arms, his hair stood on end, and he blasted her with lightning. It felt immensely satisfying to watch her spasm, sizzle, and fry. But that was stupid. You could have taken her out with half the juice. You need to conserve. He checked his stores again. 42%. Idiot. He was making his way to the apartment he shared with Tomic Vrona. They had chosen a place in Dog's Run because it was a backwater area just beginning to improve. Nice, but not so nice as to draw attention, and outside both Izzet and Orzhov territory, where they'd be less likely to be seen together by anyone in their respective guilds. He needn't have worried. Their secret apartment was apparently the worst-kept secret in all of Ravnica, which only increased his fears now. Bolas knew of the place, and the dragon couldn't be happy that Rao had abandoned his service. If Bolas struck at Rao through Tomic, there was another Eternal. This time, Rao controlled himself, using a precision strike to blow off the creature's head. It collapsed, jerking, then stilled. He checked again. 41%. At least I'm losing the battle at a slower pace. A guild mage of the Izzet had no business falling in love with a personal assistant to the heir of the Orzhov, and Rao had denied for as long as he could manage that love had anything to do with his relationship to Tomic.
but he was past that. There was no point in maintaining that convenient fantasy. The truth was simply this. No one in his life had ever mattered to Ral as much as Tomek did now. A block away from his destination, he turned a corner and found yet another Eternal murdering a young woman, while two male friends cowered and watched and did nothing but whimper her name.
Emmy! Emmy! No, Emmy!
He blasted the Eternal and rushed past her friends, growling,
"Get off the street, you idiots!"
He checked. 39%. A dozen or so Eternals were coming down the lane in the other direction. Too many to mess around with. He spread his arms wide and fired simultaneously at the Eternals on the far left and the far right. He was lucky Lazatep was such a good conductor. With a little effort, he created a circuit between himself and the dozen. They squirmed and jerked like butterflies pinned to a wall until he shut the electricity off, and as one, they dropped to the cobblestones smoking. 34%. He was at the front door, was actually reaching for the handle when he heard the shriek. He whipped about and spotted an eternalized angel descending toward him from above. He fired. He missed. He barely dodged out of the way. Rolling, he came to a stop, face up. 33%. He felt like an overturned tortoise. The accumulator on his back was as light as he could engineer it to be, which meant it wasn't any heavier than it had to be, which meant it was still damn heavy. He was used to it, had trained with it, had fought multiple battles with it, but that didn't make it any easier to recover and roll and make ready to fire again. He managed it. The angel descended, wearing bronze talons over its knuckles. Ral fired again. Missed again. Dodged again, but not quite quickly enough. The talons of the angel's right hand shredded his leather jacket and sliced shallow gashes into his shoulder. He inhaled with a hiss and hoped that the talons hadn't been dipped in poison. 32%. The angel was swooping around for another assault. Ral spread his arms, winced, and chanted softly through the pain. He generated a virtual net of crisscrossing electricity in the air. The angel barrel-rolled away from it, accelerated straight up, and dived down on Ral's side of the net. 27%. Ral jerked his fists back toward his chest, and the lightning net sped toward him, only slightly faster than the dread angel. It entangled the angel's Lazatep-coated wings, and the thing was done for, which didn't exactly stop it from plowing into Ral as it thrashed and died. It was a damned good thing Ral was immune to his own electricity, as the creature took a good 30 seconds to fry. And as Ral wasn't immune to the heat its death was generating, he screamed as the red-hot Eternal burned through his jacket, tunic, and a good percentage of his pants. He pushed its husk off him. 21%. He got to his feet as quickly as he could manage. What remained of his clothes were in scorched tatters, and patches of his skin could use a good healing spell. But none of that mattered now. He looked around for any more lingering Eternals, and seeing none, grabbed the door handle and entered the building. He rushed upstairs to find Tomek, to take him in his arms. But when he reached their apartment, he found it empty. 24. Kaya. For whatever reason, the Eternals had, as far as Kaya could tell, not yet chosen to enter any buildings. Phalanxes and crops of the Dread Horde were scouring Ravnican streets, but the citizenry was at least temporarily safe if they remained indoors. It was hardly a scenario that could be counted on to continue. It wasn't exactly a Bolas trait to knock first before creating mayhem. But the planeswalkers would happily take whatever slight respite they could get for as long as it would last. Thus, Kaya, Teo, and Rat were fighting Eternals as they made their way through the streets, byways, and alleys of the city, saving bystanders as they went. But it was easy enough to tell those rescued to find shelter somewhere, anywhere.
The trio could then move on without much further concern for those left behind. Moreover, they never had to venture inside themselves, which was a small blessing. Going house to house, building to building, would have been much more dangerous and time-consuming. They were making their way toward the Orzhova, the cathedral opulent, to summon the forces of the Orzhov Syndicate into battle against the enemy. Since there were only three of them, and since Teo's abilities were largely, well, almost entirely defensive, they tried to avoid the larger contingents. But their success rate against individual Eternals, or small crops, was fairly spectacular. Kaya did most of the heavy lifting when it came to the actual killing of these creatures. They seemed particularly vulnerable to her ghost daggers, and they couldn't touch her when she was incorporeal. She had to pay careful attention, of course. There was always the risk that while she was killing one, another might find its moment, but being careful was nothing new to the ghost assassin. Neither was slaying the undead. Plus, Teo was there, watching her back. He claimed to be a novice shield mage, and the boy was clearly operating at the point of near exhaustion, but he did his part, protecting their backs, their fronts, their sides. He was quick and smart, and if the situation weren't half so desperate, Kaya might have been amused at the way he was constantly surprised by his own rapidly growing skills. And Rat was no slouch. She was small and quick.
Basically well-named.
And she was talented with her own two daggers. She'd wait for her moment, then duck out from behind one of Teo's diamond-shaped shields, dodge two or three Eternals, and then stab one that hadn't seen her coming, plunging both daggers into the Eternal's eyes, deep into its brain. The creature would fall instantly, and Rat would race away before another of the Eternals even reacted to her presence. During a brief respite, as they crossed a wide but empty thoroughfare, empty of everything but a handful of corpses that showed the Eternals had already made their presence known here, Teo turned to Kaya and asked,
"So are we Gatewatch now?"
"I don't know," she replied. "Never heard of Gatewatch before today. Not entirely clear what it is."
Rat said, "The good guys, I think."
Teo nodded.
"Ravnica's equivalent to the Shield Mage Order."
Kaya shook her head. "I don't think they're limited to Ravnica. All the members are planeswalkers. Perhaps they're the multiverse's equivalent of your order."
Rat shrugged.
"So, the good guys?"
"Yes."
"Then I think both of you are Gatewatch," Rat said. "Not me, of course. I'm not a walker."
A thought seemed to strike the young girl, and she laughed, saying,
"I'm not Gatewatch. I'm gateless." "That's the rat. Always gateless."
"You've killed more Eternals than I have," Teo said.
"That's such a sweet thing to say, Teo. You're such a sweet boy. Isn't he a sweet boy, Mistress Kaya?"
"Very sweet," Kaya said while scanning for the next crop or phalanx.
Teo frowned slightly, saying to Rat,
"I'm pretty sure I'm older than you."
She ignored him.
"That's why I adopted him first thing."
She turned back to cut him off.
"How's that cut? I can't even see a scar."
Thrown by her rapid changes of subject, Teo rubbed his head where the cut used to be.
"Fine, I guess. I can't feel it at all."
"It was nice of Mr. Goldmane to heal it for you. It's not like he wasn't busy with other things, but with all the Eternals he was killing left and right. Wasn't it nice of Mr. Goldmane, Mistress Kaya?"
"Very nice," Kaya said while nodding absently, thinking about how exactly she might convince the Orzhov to join the fight.
She had already seen Mari lead the Izzet into the field, fighting side by side with bio-warriors of the Simic Combine, under the command of a merfolk hybrid named Voril. It was a rare moment of unity between guilds, and it was a pleasant surprise to see the Simic step out from behind their walls of isolation to help.
"Now if only I can get my own guild to do as much."
She was dubious about her chance of success, but realized there was no chance at all if she didn't get to Orzhova.
She could now see the spiky spires and the literally flying buttresses of the cathedral opulent looming above other closer, shorter structures. Anxious to finally get there, Kaya raced down a side street, practically an alley, that seemed a more direct route, running diagonally between two tall buildings. Rat grabbed Teo's hand and followed. 100 yards in, Rat said,
I don't think we want to go this way.
We do if it'll get us to the Orzhova faster.
It's a dead end.
Kaya stopped short. She turned to face Rat and said,
You might have mentioned that sooner. You looked so confident. I thought maybe you knew about a secret passage. I mean, there are a lot of secret passages through Ravnica. A lot. And I pretty much know all of them, or most of them anyway, but I figured that Guildmaster Kaya might know one or two I don't, right?
Rat, I've been Guildmaster for a matter of weeks. I've only been on Ravnica for a matter of months. I barely know this city any better than Teo here.
I only arrived this morning, Teo said rather needlessly.
I know that, Kaya growled.
Rat's head bobbed.
Right. So from now on, the native navigates. This way.
Still holding Teo's hand, she pulled him back the way they came. He let himself be dragged away. Kaya followed, feeling both angry and silly at the same time.
Why was I in the lead?
Okay, Rat said. Maybe back the other way.
Why?
Kaya asked a split second before she knew the reason. A crop of Eternals was entering the mouth of the alley 20 feet ahead. Too many for them to fight in this enclosed space. The creatures spotted the trio and instantly charged after them.
Kaya, Rat, and Teo turned and ran.
Kaya shouted, You said this was a dead end!
It is!
Then where are we running to?
There's a door to a speakeasy at the end of the alley. It won't get us to the cathedral, but if we get inside, maybe the creepies will forget about us.
It seemed as good a solution as any. The Eternals were fast, but they weren't running for their lives. Rat, Teo, and Kaya beat them to the end of the alley and the heavy iron door. Finally releasing Teo's hand, Rat tried the door handle. It was locked. She banged on the portal with both fists. There was no answer. She knelt and said,
It's okay, I can pick the lock.
So can I, Kaya said, staring at the advancing Eternals. But I don't think there's time.
I'll buy the time, Teo stated.
He began chanting and formed a largish diamond shield of white light to separate them from their pursuers mere seconds before the crush of Eternals smashed into it. Teo grunted painfully but maintained the shield,
even expanded it into a rectangle that spanned the width of the alleyway so that none of the creatures could slip around it.
I didn't know you could do that,
Rat said over her shoulder while working the lock.
Neither did I. Never done it before. But I can use the alley walls to substitute for the geometry. It's like leaning in.
If you say so.
He didn't respond. Kaya was close enough to see the beads of perspiration forming on the boy's forehead and cheeks. He chanted under his breath, his lips stretched tight and nearly white. The Eternals slammed their weapons against his shield relentlessly, and he seemed to feel every blow. She wondered how long he could hold out under the strain. Something clicked softly.
Got it, Rat said, standing.
She grabbed the door handle. It still wouldn't budge.
It's unlocked. Must be bolted from the inside.
Leave it to me, Kaya said.
She ghosted through the door. But on the other side, the news wasn't good. A heavy iron bar had been placed across the door, with large padlocks at either end. Kaya was fairly confident she could pick both locks, but not necessarily fast enough to get the two kids inside before Teo's shield failed.
I could leave them behind.
She barely knew either of them. She hadn't known they existed before today. Kaya was an assassin and a planeswalker, constantly on the move, constantly leaving people, even worlds, behind. She wasn't exactly the type to make lasting bonds. Friends, she well knew, were a liability in her line of work.
I should leave them behind.
But I won't. She ghosted her head back through the door and said,
I'll get it open, but you need to hold out a bit longer.
Teo, eyes squinched shut, nodded once but said nothing. He was no longer chanting, just gritting his teeth and leaning toward his shield with both hands as a Lazatep Minotaur head-butted it over and over, while the rest of the Eternals smashed maces against it or the butts of their sickle-shaped swords. White light flashed at every impact. It wasn't going to hold. Recognizing the danger, Kaya ghosted her body back into the alley.
She drew her daggers and reached inward, pulling on the many Orzhov contracts she controlled as its guildmaster, pulling against their resistance in order to summon the full strength and numbers of her exalted position, the inherent power of it, to this location. She knew that many of the highest-ranking members of the syndicate considered her an interloper, which she was, one who'd released many a poor soul from crushing debt, which she had, and would love to delay answering her call just long enough for her to perish, which she just might. She couldn't count on them arriving in time or even releasing the raw power it would take for her to blow out all these Eternals. Fortunately, help came from another quarter. From behind the crop, Kaya heard shouts and whoops and hoots. She didn't understand, but she saw Rat smile and put a reassuring hand on Teo's shoulder.
"Just a few more seconds," she said to him. "It'll be all right."
Gruul warriors, male and female, attacked the Eternals from behind, axes chopping through Lazatep, tusks piercing, hammers raining down. One particularly burly human with long dark hair smashed two Eternal heads together with enough force to shatter their skulls into Lazatep and bone fragments. The Eternals instantly forgot the trio and turned toward their new foes. Teo slumped, dropping his shield. Rat stood over him protectively with her daggers out. Brandishing her long knives, Kaya began attacking the Eternals from behind. A young, callow, grinning Gruul warrior cut off an Eternal's head with a long-weighted scythe. She could see a golden trail of energy leeching off him and heading skyward in the general direction of the beacon. He was a planeswalker. He glanced over at her and cackled out,
"You must be Guildmaster Kaya, the almighty ghost assassin. Lucky for you, Domri Raid was here, enjoying the bloody chaos."
"Your Raid?"
He looked immediately insulted.
"Course I'm Raid. Who else?"
Kaya had heard of Domri Raid, new guildmaster of the Gruul clans. His predecessor, the Cyclops Borborygmos, had lost face with the clans by agreeing to join Rao's attempt to unite the guilds. When that had blown up in everyone's face, when Vraska blew it up, the Cyclops was out of a job and Raid was in. But Kaya had never actually seen Domri before.
How had this arrogant little snot, planeswalker or not, managed to rise up among the brutal Gruul to even be in a position to take command?
She suspected him of being another Bolas pawn. Yet here he was, killing Eternals and, thankfully, saving her ass.
"I'm grateful," she forced herself to say.
"Damn right you are,"
he responded, quite pleased with himself. By this time, most of the Eternals were in pieces on the ground. Domri snorted and shouted to his warriors,
"Okay, mates, fun's over here. Let's find us some more."
They started to head back up the alley, Domri leading the way and the burly, dark-haired warrior taking up the rear. Problematically, one of the Eternals wasn't quite dead enough. It was missing an arm, but that didn't seem to trouble it much, and it leapt to its feet with a sword in hand, prepared to stab it into the burly man's back. Teo reacted first, reaching out a hand and launching a small but solid sphere of white light at the back of the creature's head. It impacted hard, and the Eternal stumbled briefly, making just enough noise to alert Burly to the danger. The big man turned in time to see Teo hit the Eternal with another sphere.
Then Kaya was upon the Eternal, stabbing up into its guts with both her knives.
The Eternal was dying, but didn't seem to know it yet. It was still swinging its sword at Burly. Suddenly, Rat was riding the Eternal's shoulders. She stabbed her daggers down into its eyes and deep into its skull. It collapsed under her. Burly frowned. With some reluctance, he grunted thanks to both Kaya and Teo while ignoring Rat completely. Then he turned and trotted off to catch up to his fellow Gruul.
"Who was that?"
Teo asked.
Rat shrugged. "The big guy? That's Gan Shakta. My father."
25. Jace Beleren. Only Jace, Karn, and Teferi had remained on the plaza to stem the tide of Eternals marching through the planar bridge. Per Gideon's command, the rest of the dozen or so planeswalkers whom they'd already identified had spread out across the city, some, like Zarek and that Kaya woman, to attempt once more to rally the guilds, the rest to identify and recruit new planeswalkers as they arrived, and all to slay as many Eternals as they could find. And they would slay a lot, Jace knew. But there was considerable distance between a lot and enough, when more and more of the Dreadhorde continued to emerge from Amonkhet. The Gatewatch's mission to Amonkhet had been an unmitigated disaster, a devastating horror. Yet Jace had not realized how little of the actual horror he and his companions had witnessed. The number of Eternals they had seen that day was clearly only a fraction of Bolas's true army. Moreover, the massacre of Amonkhet's populace had resulted in corpses already repurposed into yet more Lazotep warriors. Such was the fate promised for the peoples of Ravnica.
Still, that can't be all there is to this.
If all Bolas wanted was to conquer Ravnica, even if that in and of itself was merely a step toward creating an even larger Dreadhorde to use against Dominaria, or Innistrad, or the entire multiverse, then the dragon's plans were too complicated by far. Why bring and activate the Immortal Sun, thus forcing your greatest potential enemies to stay here and fight? Wouldn't he prefer a clear field? And could it really be a coincidence that Niv-Mizzet's beacon was summoning planeswalkers for the sun to trap here?
No.
Jace would lay odds that Niv and Zarek had somehow been manipulated by Bolas into creating and activating the beacon. The beacon and sun in combination were a huge piece of this puzzle. This wasn't just a trap for the tattered remnants of the Gatewatch.
This is a trap for every damn planeswalker in the multiverse.
Jace knew that with as much certainty as he knew anything.
But the final piece is still missing. The trap is set. How and when will it be sprung?
Teferi strained to slow time around the planar bridge, to slow the advance of the Eternals, and to slow their reaction times. Jace created illusions as close to the portal as possible to set the Eternals against one another and create a traffic jam right in front of its gaping maw. Karn was ideally positioned to crush as many Lazotep-covered skulls as he could manage from among the Eternals that passed through the spells of Teferi and Jace. Among the three of them, it was an effective strategy. But it wasn't enough. It was a finger in a dike, with Eternal waters pouring and spurting out around the sides. Using a version of Lavinia's telescopic spell, Jace glanced over at Nicol Bolas on his throne. Despite the illusions of invisibility that Jace was using to hide himself, Karn, and Teferi from the Eternals, he felt certain Bolas knew they were there.
And he just doesn't care. In fact, he may actually be happy about it.
Still using the spell, Jace glanced over at Liliana Vess. He made a cursory attempt to read her mind, but there was too much psychic noise from the Onaki spirits that possessed the chain veil she wore. Plus, Bolas was probably blocking any attempts to read, reach, or influence his pawn. Jace was incensed at Liliana. And yet he pitied her also. She had given up true friendship by siding with Bolas. And there might be no one in the multiverse who needed a true friend as much as Liliana Vess. Gideon had come to trust and rely on her, to believe in her. Chandra had loved her as a sister. And Jace.
Did I love her?
Once, maybe. Liliana had used and manipulated Jace at every turn. She had treated him like a plaything, or a tool.
In every sense of the word.
But that didn't change the fact that he had once had true feelings for her. Or, if he was being honest, that he still had feelings for her. He was no longer in love with her, no longer infatuated with the smoky mysteries of that temptress, Liliana Vess.
But damn it, I do still care about her.
And he couldn't shake the notion that he had failed her, too.
that somehow there must have been some way to reach her, to touch her, to draw this infamous dark necromancer into the light. He knew she had reached out to him, that even while attempting to manipulate him, she had tried in her halting, wounded way to make a real connection with Jace Beleren. And he knew with certainty that at one or two key moments, he had rejected that connection. She deserved it after the crap she pulled. But she deserved better from him as well. Of course, she wasn't the only one he had failed. The list was long and began with the 10 guilds of Ravnica. Hell, not just the guilds. He could now put every living being on Ravnica on that list. Jace had never truly embraced being the living guild pact, but he certainly missed that power now. Ral and Lavinia had explained what went wrong in their attempt to unite the guilds and give Niv-Mizzet the power to destroy Bolas. And Jace had wanted to be furious at their hubris, but there was plenty of blame to go around. If the living guild pact had been here doing his damn job, then Niv and Ral's efforts might never have been necessary. Worse, if Jace hadn't done what he'd done to Vraska, hadn't wiped her mind of all true knowledge of Bolas's evil, she might not have destroyed any hope for a guild alliance. If he had come to Ravnica when he had promised and restored her memory as he had promised, she might still be here, fighting by his side, backed by the might of 10 united guilds and the full mystic power of the living guild pact. All that's on me, he thought. I miss her, he thought. Through all this thinking, Jace maintained his invisibility, Karn's invisibility, Teferi's invisibility, and the illusions at the mouth of the portal that made every Eternal think every other Eternal was a living being and potential victim. It was a bit of a strain, but not exactly the most difficult spellcasting he'd ever attempted. Not even close. I should be doing more. I should be taking charge. Jace had allowed Gideon, with his natural and uncompromised moral authority, not to mention all his natural and uncompromised charisma, to issue his commands and scatter their troops. A part of Jace, well, really all of Jace, had known it was too slapdash a solution. It was typical Gideon, well-meaning and direct, and almost entirely without any true attempt at forethought. Gideon Jura fought symptoms with no thought of how to cure the underlying disease, which hadn't stopped Jace from saying absolutely nothing in dissent. Why? So I could complain about it later like always? He didn't want to be that Jace anymore. His time with Vraska on Ixalan had changed him for the better, he believed. He didn't want to be a poor man's Liliana, playing games, solving puzzles, and manipulating his friends into taking on the responsibilities he refused to truly shoulder or embrace. By finally being able to see his true potential through Vraska's golden eyes, he had thought he'd found another way. But outside her influence, he had quickly reverted to old habits. I don't have to be Gideon's sniping second. I don't have to be Liliana's pouting ex. I can face the challenge of this day and become... Suddenly, a war cry from above roused Jace from his internal monologue and rote illusion casting. The voice was familiar, and even before Jace looked skyward, he knew it signaled the return of Gideon Jura. He was riding a Pegasus, of all things. Look at him. Gideon was born to ride a damn flying horse. Gideon wasn't alone. Flanking him were Ajani Goldmane and a female armed with an impressive bow, both riding griffins. Their three golden auras, marking them as planeswalkers, soared behind them like ether contrails. Then came the Boros Guildmaster, the angel Aurelia, leading a squadron of Boros angels and sky knights. And moving in slowly behind them all was the Boros Sky Fortress, Parhelion II. Jace sent a quick telepathic message to Gideon not to attack right at the mouth of the portal, where his and Teferi's magics were still having their effect. It wouldn't help to have the Boros forces slowed by Teferi's time field or thrown into disarray by Jace's illusions.
and there were plenty of Eternals left to fight beyond the planar bridge. Gideon signaled Aurelia with one hand, a few brief military gestures that somehow instantly related all salient knowledge. A soldier's telepathy, Jace thought ruefully. Aurelia signaled back to her Sky Knights. They swooped in to fight Eternal flyers that Karn could never reach. They descended to strafe Lazatep warriors with arrows and spears. This is actually going very well. Employing the telescopic spell again, Jace glanced at Liliana Vess, her expression hidden by the veil. Nothing in her posture had changed, however, which was a little troubling. Jace glanced at Nicol Bolas. Nothing in his expression or posture had altered in the slightest. And that was more than a little troubling.
What am I missing?
He reached out with his mind, but it was his ears that registered something first. He gradually became aware of a slow, deep, pounding beat. As it got louder, the ground began to shake in concert.
What now? Is this it? Is this Bolas's endgame?
Jace looked toward the portal, but it wasn't the source of the disturbance. And by this time, he wasn't the only one who had noticed it.
Karn shouted, "It's coming from behind us!"
Yes, it was. Jace turned just as a mighty green elemental appeared above the buildings, stepping around a marble tower and stepping over a limestone hotel, stomping toward the source of the action.
Is that Vitu Gazi?
Jace focused the telescopic spell on the tiny figures riding the elemental's branches and columns.
Is that Chandra? Jaya? Lavinia? Is that Nyssa Ravain?
Golden light flowed off his former Gatewatch ally. Despite telling him she wouldn't, Nyssa had returned, had allowed the beacon to summon her to Ravnica, had joined the battle by their side. He gently touched her mind.
"Thank you," was all he said.
She responded with the psychic equivalent of her measured smile. It washed over his mind like a summer rain. Jace felt an immense flood of relief, then felt the need to test it. He glanced toward Liliana Vess. Still no change.
Damn.
He glanced toward Nicol Bolas. The dragon was sitting up in his chair, smoke pouring out of his mouth.
It's working.
They had moved the dragon. Surprised him, at least. He might join the fight at any moment, so Jace sent out a warning message to Nyssa, Karn, Teferi, Gideon, Ajani, Aurelia, and Lavinia. He didn't include the new planeswalker, the archer. He didn't know her, and didn't know how she'd react to the telepathic intrusion. Aurelia made a wide sweep with her arm. The Parhelion II turned toward Bolas, its mystic cannon ready to fire, but waiting for the signal. Nyssa didn't wait. She made no military gestures, issued no signals. None were necessary. The massive tree elemental turned. Not toward Bolas himself, but toward the obelisk in the center of the plaza and the Bolas statue upon it. It was an eyesore and a symbol of Bolas's contempt for them all. Vitu Gazi reached toward the great column and wrapped its two trunk-like hands around it. Mighty wooden sinews pulled. Marble cracked, the pillar shifted on its base, and as Vitu Gazi stepped back, obelisk and statue came crashing down. The noise was simply spectacular. So was the sight of it all. And so was the reaction. The cheer from the Boros forces rang through the plaza as if Bolas himself had been toppled. Ravnikans, who had been hiding inside the surrounding buildings, peering through windows with fear at the Dreadhorde, threw those windows open and joined the cheering. Some even came outside, though the danger was far from over. And as if they had come from other worlds to help with the celebration, Jace saw four new planeswalkers that he did not recognize materialize in the plaza, trailing the telltale golden light of Karn's spell.
Jace watched as Vitu Gazi turned back toward the planar bridge and began crushing Eternals underfoot. Jace quickly removed the invisibility spells hiding himself, Karn, and Teferi.
We don't need to be accidentally squashed.
Jace heard the flapping of wings, and Gideon's Pegasus landed beside him. Its master didn't dismount, but leaned down over his mount and exchanged a grin with the grinning Jace.
The tide has turned, Gideon said.
Jace nodded. He knew this was a huge moment. Bolas hadn't been defeated, but something like hope was in the air. Vitu Gazi paused briefly to lower Nyssa, Chandra, Jaya, and Lavinia to the ground beside Jace, Gideon, and the Pegasus. Gideon slipped down off his saddle to hug Nyssa. Jace couldn't help shaking his head. They all knew that Nyssa didn't particularly like being hugged, but she seemed to at least appreciate the sentiment.
Hell, even Lavinia's smiling. Maybe. I think that's a smile. Well, at any rate, she's not frowning.
He said to her wryly, I bet the guilds will join the fight now. She replied with a deadpan, Everyone wants to be on the winning side. Jace kept one eye on Bolas. Smoke huffed from his jaws and nostrils. But he still made no move to join the battle. Once again, Jace became gradually aware of another deep, pounding beat. Smiling, he turned to Nyssa. Gideon said what Jace was thinking.
You woke another one?
But Nyssa was staring at the portal, and she wasn't smiling. Jace glanced back at Nicol Bolas. He was. The pounding footsteps were coming from the planar bridge. And then she emerged, ducking her head as she exited the portal. Bantu, Amonkhet's immense god of ambition, who had been killed by Bolas during an hour of pure devastation when that plane had fallen. Only now, she had been resurrected as a Lazotep-covered god eternal. And she wasn't alone. Kefnet, god of knowledge, followed. Then Oketra, god of order. And finally, Ronas, god of strength. All dead, all eternal, all as big as Vitu Gazi. The god eternals advanced. The Parhelion too fired its cannon, but to little effect, and was forced into retreat. Vitu Gazi strode forward to meet these new opponents, only to be rocked by a blow from Bantu. On the ground, Nyssa seemed to feel the blow as if she herself had been struck. She doubled over as Chandra and Gideon both rushed to her side to support her. The four dead gods quickly surrounded the elemental. They beat Vitu Gazi. Ronas tore out one of its arms. Nyssa screamed and relinquished her control. The elemental collapsed, inert. Rather hopelessly, Gideon asked Nyssa, Do you have another one? Jace watched her shake her head no and collapse into Gideon's arms. 26. Teo Virata. The three of them still hadn't achieved the cathedral, but they were no longer alone. Teo, Rat, and Kaya were now in the company of an increasing number of Domri Raid's Gruul warriors, including Rat's father, Ganshokta, plus shamans, druids, an ogre, and a couple of bipedal lizard women that Rat called Viashino. During a battle against another Eternal Phalanx, they had also been joined by what Rat called terraformers, super soldiers, and merfolk of the Simic Combine, led by Biomancer Voril, and by Izzet Mech Mages, human, goblin, and blue-skinned Vidalkin, led by Chamberlain Mari. A second battle had added two more planeswalkers to their ranks, a merfolk woman named Kiora from a world called Zendikar, and a young human woman named Samut from Amonkhet, which was apparently the source of the eternal threat. Samut fought with a fury and a passion Teo had never seen before. She seemed to know the names of every single one of her Lazotep foes, grimly saying,
You are free, Eknet. You are free, Temet. You are free, Neit, as she slew each one.
Teo had come to realize that Gobokan, with its diamond storms and monks, its humans, dwarves, and djinn, was a rather tame world relative not just to